From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in the early weeks of the pandemic when Congress had a decision to make. After all, they were urging millions of Americans to stay home, to stop going to work. And yes, some workers can work largely from home, but for millions more, working from home is not possible. So when the government tells workers to leave their jobs and stay home, what is the responsibility of government? After all, state unemployment benefits tend to replace less than half a worker's paycheck, depending on the state. Our country was facing a crisis that was moving with breathtaking speed, and Congress ultimately decided to give $600 a week to whatever the states were already offering in unemployment insurance. That $600 more was a lifeline to many workers who had no choice but to stay home. But by May, most states were reopening their economies in some fashion. Business owners found that a partial reopening, or in some cases a full reopening, was not enough to convince some workers to come back in. For some workers, the $600 additional support meant they would receive more money not going back to work. For others, they were hesitant to go back to work during a pandemic in which tens of thousands of Americans are dying. Now that $600 weekly federal support is about to run out. Congress is debating whether to extend it, or to scrap it, or to scale it down with restrictions. And not to go all both sides on this issue, but there is logic on both sides of this argument. As the Los Angeles Times notes this morning, quote, maintaining the extra unemployment payments at or near present levels would help millions of workers keep paying their rent or writing mortgage checks, making car payments, and caring for families. That's especially true right now when the pandemic is getting worse in many parts of the country and local officials are moving to restore lockdown rules that they had begun to relax when the danger seemed to be fading, end quote. And that last point is striking. The economy is not fully reopened, and it might be shut down again in many states with the caseloads rising. On the other hand, if you want to find a way to keep the economy from drowning during the pandemic, seems that we can't shut down all of it. And if businesses are going to operate, they need workers. We've heard from a number of business owners who are concerned about how capable they are of attracting workers when the additional $600 a week is still a factor. And NFIB, the National Federation of Independent Businesses, surveyed hundreds of small business owners and found that nearly 20% have been told by former employees that they're not coming back, not when this benefit is still there. Our guests are here this hour to talk about what they hope Congress does next and the impact on the economy and their work and ability to pay the bills. Hello to Crescenzo Scipione, who's Secretary of Counsel for Metro Justice. Crescenzo, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
Zahia Roll is back with us, a local artist and performer. Hello, Zahia.
Hi, thanks for having me back.
Welcome to John Love, president of Bob Johnson Chevrolet. Hi, John.
Good afternoon, Evan. Thanks for having me.
And Kevin Schulte, CEO of GreenSpark Solar. Kevin, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me, my friend.
Well, I'm going to go down the list and just ask all four of you to lay this out for me the way you see it, the way this is impacting you, because Congress has got decisions to make. If you look at what Congress might do, certainly Senate Republicans are going to have a lot to say. They are considering changing $600 a week in this unemployment benefit to $200 to $400 a week. Some Democrats have called for a maintenance of $600 into essentially throughout the pandemic or beyond. Others have called for the elimination of the benefit. Let me start with Zahia Roll. How has this impacted you, Zahia?
Well, as a musician, performance is not only my passion, but my mental health, my ability to pay the bills, all of that. And also, I am an employer for many other musicians because I book. And this currently, even today, we have been mandated by the state that we cannot proceed with any live performances as it stands right now. So this $600 additional has been a lifesaver. There's just no way that there would have been that bills would have been paid if it wasn't for that. Without that, my unemployment is like $152 a week, which I think is a very common thing for most people in my industry and other artists, bartenders, fitness instructors. We're in that same boat. So without the $600, there's no way. And I'm basically at this point thinking of August 1st as doomsday. If these resources are not available for people who are in industries that are not able to return to work, then we're going to see a ton of repercussions that are going to happen in the following months. And if I were a business owner, I would be very afraid of September and what that looks like.
Crescenzo Scipione, how do you see it?
So I think at the risk of confounding the options you laid out there, I'm going to go ahead and say that actually the solution that needs to happen is an increase. Every other developed nation in the world has instituted regular payments that are significantly higher than the meager $600 we have here. Canada's is $1,000 a week, and most of Europe's is even higher than that. The $600 is a tiny cash Band-Aid on what was already a gaping economic wound before the pandemic hit. Between 2016 and 2018, Rochester went up from fourth poorest city in the U.S. to third poorest, and somehow we're debating a reduction in the money that's barely keeping working people afloat.
John Love, how do you see it?
Well, I would generally agree with both of the previous guests' comments. I think for us as an employer, there's a couple challenges. The first one is our employees needed the benefit, and quite honestly, still need the benefit despite the fact that they've returned to work, because it is more expensive to live in the times of COVID. Everything is just more expensive and more difficult. The problem is that Congress hasn't reacted quick enough to come up with a solution to allow people back to work and still earn a benefit to provide for the enhanced expense that these days are bringing us. And Evan, just a quick scenario. If $15 an hour seems to be the mantra, the fight for 15, if you will, and that would equal $600 a week for a worker on a 40-hour work week. However, during the COVID time, if you were laid off, it would equate to $300 of unemployment insurance plus the $600 of enhancement, or $900 a week, which is $300 more than you'd get to go to work each day. And people in this income bracket, that $300 difference per week really adds up. So to have the risk of losing that, to be able to go out and earn a living, is the challenge that our employees and our applicants are conflicted about. And if you take it down to the $13 an hour, it gets even worse, that there's a $340 advantage to stay home versus go to work. So what we find is, A, we have employees that would love to be working, but financially we can't force them to because of the impact that this would have on them. And you have to go up over $20 an hour to get it to be a break even or a gain to go back to work. And then in the other case for us, Evan, we've got over 50 job openings in 9 different stores that we have. And we have applicants coming in saying, I'd love to do this job once the COVID enhancement is over. But right now it doesn't make sense to do it. There's not enough more. And you don't have to be skilled in a lot of these positions. I don't want this to be a job pitch, but it's not. These are not highly skilled jobs, and they pay very well, but people simply are not applying to work today because they would go backwards. And we get it. We understand it. So we're hoping there'll be some extra money that allows people to go back to work full-time, not just a day or two a week, and still receive an enhancement while at the same time having a safety net for those that can't find employment.
Kevin Schulte, CEO of GreenSpark Solar, what's been your experience?
We've sort of experienced this benefit in waves, right? At the start of having to be quarantined and shut down our business from a construction and solar insulation perspective, our first response was a big deep breath, like thank goodness someone is going to take care of our people while we can't put them on roofs and out in fields to build solar. And, you know, so we were extremely thankful. We were glad that Congress moved quickly. And we continue to be glad that that benefit is available to those that can't come to work. We experienced a sort of second conversation around it when we were able to be reopened, sort of the end of May, early June timeframe. And some of our people were hesitant to come back to work because, you know, they were receiving that benefit and were worried about the risks inherent in, you know, a global health crisis. And now, similar to Bob Johnson Chevrolet, we have a series of job openings available to us, and we are challenged by some of the folks that we've talked to not ready to come back into the workforce despite having well-paying, good benefits, et cetera, available to them to come work for us. And so, you know, we've started to have dialogues across the board as to, you know, What are we going to do? How are we going to recruit people into our business through this challenge? Because we're fully of the belief that Our government needs to put cash in people's hands. We have an unemployment crisis. We have a health crisis that needs to be dealt with. But we also have a climate crisis that our business is hoping to be a part of curing. And we want good people to come join us in the process of trying to solve that crisis as well.
So let me ask all four of you, and I'll start with Kevin and work back across the group. If you are getting a chance to advise Congress on policy, then what's the next step? What should they pass, or what's the policy that is going to solve this problem in a number of different directions? I mean, you're all acknowledging that workers are hurting. You're also concerned about the impact on businesses. Kevin, let's start with you. What's the policy? What does Congress need to do?
No, I think the benefit should be extended. I think additionally there should be a back-to-work bonus. So for those that are choosing to come off unemployment and go back to work, and I believe the other person on the call suggested something similar, which is we'd like to see, rather than government just giving you a benefit to stay off, here's a little bit of a boost to your income as you come back to work. I'd like to see some hybrid of the existing benefit in that, because we fully are aware of the millions of hurting people and families out there that need the benefit. At the same time, we believe we offer a safe opportunity to return to work with outdoor construction, et cetera. And so something like a return to work bonus would be extremely meaningful in us enhancing our workforce and getting more of our work done.
Okay, John Love.
So we've looked at this, Evan, and what we believe is that there should be a universal benefit for every American from Congress. And beyond that, we can't let the state off the hook on this. There is much of a conversation piece here, because for us, the ideal scenario would be our employees get to come back to work, and if they've paid into the unemployment system, allow them to draw the state unemployment as well. So we shouldn't be penalizing employees to come back to work. And despite what we may read here or there, there's an employment crisis in our market of trying to hire employees. There's not a business out there that would say that they're open for business and they're not hiring. It's just we need bodies back to work, but we don't want them to be penalized for choosing to wake up each day and go find a new skill, a new job, and take new opportunities as they come. And right now that's the penalty that the state and the federal government are pushing against people that want to go back to work.
Crescenzo, you touched on what you want Congress to do. Lay it out. What are you going to tell them to do with this?
Yeah, I mean, so first, as I said before, is to extend and ideally increase the benefits available. And also, you know, folks have talked about a back-to-work bonus. I think that's fine. The idea, though, of hazard pay for essential workers, and really at this point, any workers whose jobs are reopening and they have actual contact with customers, that hazard pay is really essential. If we want people to go back to work, we have to take that need seriously. But the other thing I would like to tie in here is that as the beginning of the school year approaches, there's going to be a major dilemma for working parents as to whether they stay home, you know, whether schools reopen, keeping kids home, being able to manage childcare and a return to work in these new pandemic conditions. And it seems like in that context, what Congress and really every level of government should be doing is finding ways to pay families to stay home and take care of their kids so that we can go about school reopening and reopening of the rest of our economy in a safe and deliberate way.
Hmm. So higher role, what do you want Congress to do?
Well, first and foremost, I definitely hope that they do extend the CARES Act that is currently in place at the $600 level. I love that it was brought up about parents who are now forced with the decision to stay home because of the homeschooling. As I am also a mother of four kids, so that is something that is real for me. Unfortunately, in my industry, I won't be able to return in September anyway, but I do know that for the parents who are in that situation where they're going to have to figure out how they are not just leaving their children in charge of their younger ones, or needing daycare or anything of that sort, that's a very big expense in itself. So I love the idea of that being somehow worked into the process with what the government decides to do with policy. I also do like what was mentioned earlier about the returning to work bonus. That sounds great and something that I think would help with the initiative for people who are understanding that this is their living wage is what they're experiencing right now, and it they deserve a living wage.
Let me jump in and say to listeners, if you want to call and weigh in with your thoughts on this, with $600 a week in a federal unemployment benefit set to run out at the end of this month, we're just days away from that. Congress is debating whether to extend it, whether to reduce and restrict it, or whether to eliminate it entirely. And I think this conversation, if I can say so, you've got maybe listeners would have assumed, well, this was going to be business versus the workers. Now, they're not going to agree on everything, but you're not hearing animosity here. I mean, when you hear John Love and Kevin Schulte speak from the business perspective, they understand people are hurting, and they understand the challenge that workers have when it comes to deciding what's best for the family, what can we do about this, but they're also realistically facing a quandary here about, you know, can we get people back to work if we think work is safe enough to do? And I think with John Love, Kevin Schulte, Zahaya Roll, Crescenzo Scipione here, we're hearing some proposed solutions. It's not clear what Congress is going to do yet, and this is going to get a lot of coverage, but Zahaya described August 1st as kind of a doomsday scenario for a lot of people who are relying on the $600 a week, who are facing mortgages, facing rent payments, facing the kind of bills that are going to come due here. And one of the ideas brought up many, many times, but more so recently, is a universal basic income. Now, for a while, this was the Andrew Yang thing. His candidacy was based on $1,000 a month for all Americans. But now, even members of Congress like Joe Morelli, who has admitted he's never really thought much about UBI until recently, but he was on this program last week and said that for the first time, he's really thinking that maybe this is the most elegant way to do this. Instead of just trying to target this industry or this scenario, just put cash in people's hands. And let's listen to what Joe Morelli said about that.
I think this is an interesting time. I mean, what you really know is that because of the extraordinary nature of it, there are things that we are doing that we should be learning from. And so I think it's interesting. I've had some concerns about the proposition of UBI. This crisis will allow us to really look at it and see whether or not it's something, at least in whole or in part, we should be thinking about as Americans. So, and look, I also am of the view, although I have obviously philosophical leanings on just about every subject, as new data comes in or as new information comes in, as new experiences come in, you ought to use those as a way to, inform your thinking on the subject. So I think the stimulus checks, I think we should consider another round of stimulus checks, whether it's $1,200 or more, and whether or not we ought to bring the income level down. I think those are all conversations to have, but people are struggling, and I think the federal government needs to continue to think about how we provide support for those families that are struggling. And frankly, Evan, what I've said in so many different forms is, if you think about it this way, that to the extent that you help people with the income side of their ledger, so you replace their paychecks, or we do enhancements to unemployment, or we do stimulus checks, it makes it less necessary for us to be going in and saying, okay, we need to give rent forgiveness or mortgage forgiveness, things that once you start in financial instruments, there are spin-off effects that you may not entirely understand, and you could have a significant impact. So if we focus on the income side and every family was essentially made whole, they can continue to pay the bills that they've paid, and you don't have to be on the expense side as much. So that's something that I've thought from the beginning was the way for us to proceed. I still think it's the way for us to proceed. And look, if this ends up being an experiment on universal basic income and it teaches us something and we end up thinking maybe that is the way to approach it, I think these are some interesting questions.
Let me ask all four of you. I'll start with Kevin Schulte. Does that appeal to you? And would that potentially solve the challenge here of helping people who certainly need the help and have been told they had to stay home for a long time, but also businesses seeking to now hire or rehire? Does this potentially solve any of that for you, Kevin?
Yeah, and I'll remind you that that's not an Andrew Yang thing, right? That goes all the way back to
I
Mark
know.
Luther
well,
King, the founder of that idea. But,
to be fair, I think Pete Nabosny created it. He's a Rochesterian. No, to be fair, yes, UBI is certainly not just he built his candidacy, and I think a lot of Americans became more familiar with UBI based on that candidacy. Sure. But thank you for the correction. It's fair. Go ahead, Kevin.
For sure, and I love the idea, and what I think. I really appreciate. So I actually listened live to Congressman Morelli on your show last week, and what I really appreciated about his commentary is that we as a people have to be ready to learn, and as an employer, I have to be ready to learn. And so the idea that we could institute a universal basic income, make sure that the hurting segments of our population, the unemployed, the disenfranchised, et cetera, are cared for in that way, and that it extends at least till the end of this pandemic, and we can understand and learn from that, is one of the wisest things I've heard out of Washington in a really long time. Because that opportunity to actually go for something and learn from it and move our society forward is really important, because I think as a business owner and just in life, what I'm challenged most by through this process is everything's new. 20 years of learning how to run my business doesn't apply every day to what I have to do to get to the other side of this global health crisis. And so that's mostly what I really appreciate about it. I am not really in a great position to say, you know, $100 a month or $1,000 a month or $5,000 a month is the right economic choice to satisfy the needs of our society. But I am really open to the concept and open to our Congress being in such a learning place to help our society evolve.
John Love?
Yeah, I would be totally for a universal basic income. I think more importantly, because we have to take care of our families with children, those that are low-wage earners or disenfranchised. But we also need to remove at the state and federal level what I would call the work penalty. There are many situations pre-COVID, and this is our chance maybe to fix it, where there's actually a penalty for people to go and get a job and go to work. They lose their food benefits, their housing vouchers, federal and state benefits, because they want to be in the workforce and be a participating member of society. And we have to address that, and this may be our chance to do that.
Crescenzo Scipione.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I'm glad to hear that Congressman Morelli is approaching this with a sort of open mind and is being experimental about it. The one thing that I would say makes me a bit nervous about what I heard just now is the idea that it would displace things like rent cancellation or mortgage forbearance.
Yes,
I understand that in theory you could trade one off for another, but to be honest, I don't remember the last time something like this from federal or New York government came in a sufficient cash amount to actually displace those kinds of needs, especially in a crisis like this. And as a general point, I would say that there's an important distinction between restoring things to normal and making people's economic situation whole. Before the pandemic, our poverty levels were such that a third of adults already lived in poverty and half of our children did. So in fact, what we need to do right now is give people an economic boost and control the expenses. We need to do both at the same time, not choose one.
Okay, Zahai Roll.
I'm loving what everyone's saying, in all honesty. I something that I just was reflecting on as people were talking about this whole thing, but it's really quite amazing how this darkness of COVID has really showed universally how there's so many ways that many Americans can't breathe. And that is just pretty much a theme that I see throughout these past months of life experience with Miss Rona. Before COVID, I actually was making a living wage doing my passion. And it was something that I feel like I've been very blessed with. And presently, the idea that I cannot return the way I was in the past is something that's very concerning. So I love the idea that we can continue with a living wage and if something has passed so that people can do this while many of us reinvent ourselves, really. I don't know anybody who likes to just be at home and exist. That doesn't It's not in most human nature. You want to be able to go out and provide and pursue your passions. So, again, I think really everything that's been said previously, I am in total agreement and love these ideas that are coming to the table now.
Well, and let's talk a little bit about what Zahaya says there and what you heard from John Love earlier this hour when it comes to maybe some of the stereotypes that are out there. The stereotype that, well, people just want to sit at home and not work and collect money. Whereas John, I think, is just being pragmatic. John Love said earlier this hour, it's hard to blame people if they're just making a numbers decision when they have bills to pay, they have family to take care of. I mean, that's not knocking workers. It is making just a simple choice based on numbers. But there's also this idea, I think, that some business owners feel attacked, and maybe this is where some of our guests will part a little company. Let me work through both of these concepts. First, on the worker side, let me read two comments. Gayla writes to us to say, I've been receiving the extra $600. As soon as restaurants were able to open to 50% capacity, I went back to work. I only work 3 days a week because business is not really booming right now and there are limitations. I would gladly go back to my regular schedule of 6 days a week, 45 to 50 hours a week. Gayla's essentially saying in the restaurant industry, you could have been working 45, 50, 60 hours a week, making a lot of money. Well, now there's capacity limitations, there's fewer people going out to eat. So even if you can, quote, go back to work, it's not the same. So the notion of staying home or not going back to work and receiving that $600 might be more appealing because for servers, it's not the same work and it's not the same income. Patrick writes to us to say, a person in my life works in the service industry, which has started to come back. With lowered capacities and twice the cleaning standard, i.e. more work there, I can't possibly see how someone in the service industry could ever make what they were making, which probably wasn't enough anyways, plus they have to do more work to get it. I told the person in my life who's getting $800 a week from the state and the feds to stay home so that they wouldn't expose themselves to any possible infection and get paid $200 to $300 more per week. I own and operate my own business. Nothing gets done without me doing it, and I've been lucky enough to have an established demographic to serve. But there's no incentive to expose oneself to a harmful virus and make less money and do twice the work. That's from Patrick. You heard from Gayla. Similar themes there. Let me start with Crescenzo on that. What would you say about those workers who are saying, hey, I could go back, but it's a different industry that I'm going back to. It's not the same level, and so I'm not necessarily compelled in the middle of a pandemic to go back. What do you think, Crescenzo?
Mm-hmm. And absolutely. And as someone who has spent a lot of years working in the service industry, their wages probably were not sufficient to begin with. I would say, as a general point for restaurants and other service industry folks, that the answer to a lot of these industry-specific questions really do have to be worked out at the ground level. And the answer there is something we've long advocated at Metro Justice as part of the Fight for 15, is not only a living wage, but the freedom to unionize on the job unopposed. So much of what's going on in this situation has to do with whether or not workers are organized to have a voice to come up with their own solutions on this. I mean, across the country, we've seen amazing solutions coming out of particularly teachers unions in cities where they're really strong about what's a safe reopen. The solution for the service industry is unionize and ask the workers what are the ways in which we can, A, make workplaces safe, and B, create the correct incentives so that people aren't essentially getting paid to put themselves in increased danger.
Okay, Zahaya, do you want to add to that?
I completely agree. I don't really have much to add in that aspect. I do have, I guess, the main concerns that always come back to me with just my own personal experience with things is just how people who are just the state is mandating that we cannot return to work, which is a whole another aspect that I believe people are going to be very concerned with.
I think that's fair, Zahaya. I mean, in most cases here, this is not any kind of scenario that many of us have ever even envisioned here. Government telling people, you cannot go back to work, or
right.
We need you to stay
right.
home. John Love, what do you make of the comments from the listeners there?
I understand and agree with a lot of that. We are I don't think that we're unique. I think there's a lot of employers out there that feel for the employees, that understand the predicament. Like I said in the beginning, a $300 advantage to stay home versus return to work on a weekly level, that's a significant change in stress reduction for people that are home that are at that $15 an hour wage or even $17 or $18 an hour wage. So we get it. I think the problem is it's always difficult to do things on a grand scale. And if we could put pressure on our state government to come up with solutions so there's not a return to work penalty while still solving the challenges of child care and the other things that are going on, not just during COVID, child care has always been an issue for earners. So we need to solve that problem. We have a better chance to do it locally. The other thing that I would stress, though, Evan, is that there are a lot of industries out there that are training people and putting them in very good wage jobs. Employees should not get pigeonholed and say, well, I have to be a server or I have to be a truck driver or whatever it is. Go out, poke around, step outside the box. You'd be amazed at how many jobs there are and how tight the workforce is in the Rochester market. And so I would just stress that people try that because, like I said, our biggest challenge is getting people to apply for a job. And the last thing I'll say is if you're working for somebody that's not treating you right, that's not paying you a good wage, that's not providing you a safe work environment, then you need to be on the job lines looking for a different job because they don't deserve good workers. If you're a good worker and do your job, then you deserve a good employer. And it's just that simple. And we have to prove that to our employees every day.
Kevin Schulte.
I have sort of two comments. Number one is I think that this burden somewhat is on the employers. I can't stand the conversation around the fight for 15. I mean, I know that that's a government solution that people talk about, but employers need to just get their heads screwed on straight and realize that paying a living wage is the right of every employer to just do. So we do that at GreenSpark Solar, and I agree with Mr. Love's comment about the reality that our society is evolving. The likelihood that the same number of server jobs that was available in January will be available in January of 2021 is low. So I encourage anyone that's in that place to look elsewhere. We are, for instance, hiring for a number of what we call entry-level positions, whether it be in the design world, in the installation world, project management, et cetera, where, you know, we're not requiring, you know, multiple college level degrees to come in to our company. We do pay a living wage. We pay those things. We've been a top employer in Rochester now twice. And those opportunities are open to anyone. And so some of the realities of society in January 2020 and those that will exist in January 2021, we all need to evolve our thinking to see a new path forward, because I'm not of the belief that things will be back to the same way that they were. Things will change, things will evolve, and I hope that folks out there that are looking to get back into their old way of life, if it's your passion and your all of those things, like, I encourage you to stay the course. But in the event where your job was a job and you need a new job, I think there are opportunities out there, and I hope people will have an open mind to seeking them out.
You just heard Kevin Schulte, CEO of GreenSpark Solar, John Love, president of Bob Johnson Chevrolet, Crescenzo Scipione is the secretary of council for Metro Justice, Zahia Roll is a local artist and performer. We're talking about Congress's upcoming decision about whether to extend or eliminate or scale down the $600 weekly unemployment benefit that is additional to any state unemployment benefit. And this $600 has been in place since Congress passed the CARES Act early in the pandemic. But a lot of workers, you heard Zahia Roll say, they look at August 1st as kind of a doomsday if that money goes away. So what happens for businesses that are struggling to convince employees to come back? And what happens for those workers? What should Congress do? Our guests are debating it, and we've got some really interesting feedback that I think will spark some interesting discussion after our only break of the hour here on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on the next Connections, the Democrat and Chronicle's Justin Murphy took a deep dive into Rochester's history with its name, with its founder, and what the future might hold, especially as more activists say the city should change its name, given the racist past of Nathaniel Rochester. We'll talk about it. We're also talking about grief during the pandemic and how to handle it. Talk with you Thursday. This is Connections. There's multiple. Easy for me to say. I'm just the host. That's what the show's called. Let me read some feedback. Heather says, I'm not a business owner, but a furloughed employee with no end of furlough in sight. I'm not making more on unemployment, and I would love to go back to my job. And the end of this program is very anxiety-inducing for me. Kevin McCann, a local small business owner of McCann's Local Meat, says, our staff was the exception, not the rule. They all viewed coming back to work as a much more sustainable way to earn a living. We tried to hire more people, but nobody else was willing to forego the $600. So August hits, and people will now flood the job market, only to find slim pickings and no more eligibility for unemployment. Then evictions will hit, and rent becomes a real issue. August and September are about to get weird. And Kristen, a restaurant owner in Rochester, says this. The trope that's being repeated to vilify business owners for not paying staff as much as unemployment benefits, currently up to $1,100 a week, has got me as a business owner feeling battered. That's from Kristen. John Love, I'll start with you. What do you make of Kristen's comment there about a trope of vilifying business owners for not paying as much as unemployment benefits?
You know, Evan, I guess we feel blessed that our employees haven't really picked up that narrative. We pay a great wage, well above an average wage in most cases. I've heard from people outside of our dealerships, our business, that, you know, are we paying more to draw people back in? And our message is pretty consistent. We're paying enough for our people to thrive, not only survive. And we understand that people can't come back to work because it doesn't make financial sense. And again, we need to put the pressure on the state government because they can act faster than federal and do something to not penalize people wanting to go back to work.
And I guess I just I'm curious to know, John, what you say to the argument, and perhaps we'll hear it in a moment, the argument that says no business should pay anybody less than what they would get on unemployment.
Well, I think every business does pay more than what they get on unemployment. The enhancement of COVID changes the dynamic of that. And the reality is a job is worth a certain amount. There's a bandwidth that a job is worth. Businesses don't have the luxury of just automatically increasing a wage because the federal government puts out a COVID enhancement of $600. So I don't think employees should work for a low-wage employer that pays less than they could maybe get with federal or state benefits. But I don't think that you can expect most small businesses to be able to just turn on a dime and add $600 to every person's paycheck, especially not in New York State with the amount of taxation and regulation that we face as small business owners.
Kevin Schulte.
I think, you know, as a business owner, if you can go to sleep easily at night knowing that you're caring for your people that are working for you, then those tropes don't impact you. Those shouldn't impact you. So I encourage all business owners out there to take care of their people and to be empathetic and loving in the face of what is a really big challenge and in not look so internally. So I may be challenging what the caller or the writer said, but the reality is, as a business owner, you can care for people and you can make sure that they are happy and safe and well-employed and all of those things. From the perspective that Mr. Love said, again, like, he's right. The economics are different if you have to pay people more. But as I look at my products in the marketplace and I say, will I do better if I pay someone more and my profitability on a certain solar installation may be less than if I don't do it at all? And from both a mission perspective and a profitability perspective, the equation is pretty clear that if I care for those people economically through their wages, benefits, and other places, that they will do better coming back to work for me at GreenSpark Solar, I should say, with me at GreenSpark Solar, than they will do. And to the point of some of the other folks on the call, they will do work that is satisfying to their life and with a positive mission moving forward. So I think there are opportunities on all sides, and I encourage employers to be strong in their conviction about taking care of their people. This is a challenging time for many.
Crescenzo Scipione, what do you think?
Yeah, I would say that it's not a trope vilifying business owners. It's not a trope at all. It's a reality. it's important to be really clear what words mean here. If the amount that you are paying people is little enough that just a temporary and unreliable and definitely going to go away at some point $600 bump is enough to lose you your labor supply, then you need to do a much better job competing for your workers. Because if you don't do that, essentially what it means is that your business model relies upon the poverty of your employees. And in my personal opinion, as well as the opinions of many other working class people, that means that your business isn't actually solvent. With all due respect to small businesses that are, behaving, well in this moment, a lot of us don't work for small businesses. A lot of us work for big businesses, and they absolutely can afford major increases to compete with this.
Did you say you agree with that, John?
I agree with that wholeheartedly. I think that, first off, again, we may be in a bit of a bubble ourselves. Our employees are not, we don't have a lot of employees at that low, low threshold of earning. But there are many large corporations that pay wages, and it baffles me that people are going to work there versus applying elsewhere, but that pay these low wages, and it's almost shameful. I think that you have to have a healthy workforce, a happy and a stable workforce, and if you have that, then your biggest challenge will be drawing more people in. It won't be retaining the people that you have. And again, as an employee, if you're not getting satisfied, recognized, and taken care of for your efforts, then by all means, it's not a hard thing to get online and start at least looking for other options, because good employees deserve amazing employers.
Zahia Roll.
He just took the words right out of my mouth of what I wanted to also say. As a musician who also books other musicians, I work a lot in the wedding industry, which is why you're hearing so much. One of the beautiful things about what I was able to do with the band Silver Arrow that I now work for and provide employment for other musicians is that we do have a standard of acceptable pay for musicians to provide service in our industry. And I have worked for previous wedding bands, and this is just what I'm going to speak from as a personal testament. I've been doing this for 15 years. Prior to Silver Arrow, I did not make a living wage. I did not make sustainable income to provide my service, and I was miserable. I had gotten to the point where I actually despised weddings. And then upon coming into this situation with Silver Arrow, where I was actually valued as a musician, able to pay myself and other musicians what their worth is, I noticed that on the front lines, those brass, I call them the musical warriors. Those musical warriors are out there, and I believe that this applies to any industry. When you have people who are representing your company, representing what you do, if they are happy, they are grateful, and they will speak highly of their company. We even see it when Delta is example of a major corporation that I know of that does that has that philosophy that happy workers, they do a lot to provide for the service workers in their company. And so just piggybacking off of all of what I believe it was Kevin and Crystal had said, like that's just, to me, that's a common sense thing. And so I don't, I hope that business owners who feel offended or insulted when people are saying, increase the wages of your workers, make sure that they're happy, take care of them, I hope that they will look at it from a different perspective. Look at it from the frame that your workers, when they're happy, they're going to speak highly of your company. They're going to want to exist there. And that's important for everybody. So.
Here's an email from Tim, who's a small business owner in Bloomfield. He says, no one has even touched on one important aspect, which is the elephant in the room here. How is our country going to pay for all of the ideas that you have discussed? I hope to hear some real answers.
Tax the rich.
Hold on one second. Hold on one second. Let me just give you some numbers, my own calculations. So an estimated 30 million people have been claiming unemployment benefits just since May, and so if you look at the federal numbers, that $600 a week. It's about $18 billion a week. On an annual basis, that'd be more than $900 billion. Was that you, Crescenzo, saying tax the rich?
It certainly was.
Okay, well, so your answer to Tim is tax the rich.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even in this COVID crisis, where we have seen on most levels of the economy dire, dire crises, we have seen at the very top levels that they are cleaning up. I mean, there are so many new billionaires in the last few months. And, you know, to say nothing of people like, you know, Jeff Bezos, you know, on the cusp of being the world's first trillionaire. And, you know, for anyone who was sort of paying attention to economic metrics before the COVID crisis hit, we're already the most economically unequal country in the developed world. So, yeah, absolutely. For this and, frankly, any other thing you might want to do to help people that's going to cost money, tax the rich. Tax the rich and tax the rich some more.
I don't know if John Love will agree, but I will ask him, how are we going to pay for these programs that have been discussed? John?
Well, for clarification, when you say tax the rich, so you'd be surprised how unrich many business owners are, but there are the elitists at the top and near the top. What I would say is there should be a consumption tax on luxury or large ticket items, and we should be looking at overhauling our federal and state income tax guidelines so that those that make it and spend it also pay back into the system. I also think that there should be, however, some relief for businesses like the solar industry, for example, or like skilled trades such as automotive technicians, which will be needed and there's a dire need, to incentivize businesses to go into communities and provide these disenfranchised folks with a pathway out of the community and into the workforce at not just a living wage, but a great wage. The government's had long enough, even on the local government, to fix these problems. We need community business members to get in and train people and get them a pathway out of poverty. And if we could just get some relief and allow us to do that training, I think I've got a better chance of changing somebody's life myself as a business owner than trying to do it through regulation, taxation, and you know, oversight by the federal, state, or local government.
All right, Kevin Schulte, how are we going to pay for these programs?
I think that the idea is right? Find new ways to tax. There is a wealth, an unbelievable amount of wealth in our country that does not provide for our country, but is generated because of the economic dynamics of our country. And then I think our spending at a federal level is all awry, and there are places where we can cut spending and put it into the right places. So I think there's opportunity, and I think, you know, smart people and smart economists will figure that out. But I think, you know, in both ways. I also agree that some of the challenges here are encouraging the industries that can thrive through this crisis to thrive more, rather than trying to take away some of the federal opportunities that are allowing those industries to thrive, which exists very much so in my business, as our federal incentives for trying to solve the climate crisis are going away. In the middle of all of this, it becomes, you know, doubly challenging to our industry. So I think there's a lot that needs to be fixed on that level. And I think giving a polar singular answer to, you know, how do we pay for all of this is remarkably irresponsible, because I think there's a lot that needs to get done.
30 seconds, Zahia. Tax the rich?
Yes, but I also do think that there needs to be a reevaluation of how the government spends its money.
There is so much more agreement this hour than I expected to find. I mean, it's really been fascinating. Real briefly here, one of our listeners said they doubt that there are that many workers who are not going back to work because of this extra $600. NFIB surveyed more than 600 businesses and found 18%, almost 20% of small businesses have not been able to hire all of their employees back because of that. And that is reflected in what John and Kevin have been telling us this hour. And that is not reflected in ways that is demeaning those workers. But real briefly, Marianne says, if you refuse to return to your job, exact hours and pay, you are supposed to be no longer eligible for unemployment benefits. Why do employers allow their employees to make this choice? That's Marianne. What's the answer, John Love?
Oh, I've got that one, because we've been challenged by that. So as an employer, we're supposed to notify the state unemployment department if an employee refuses to turn to work. So imagine, let's just play through that for a minute, and say that we do that, first off, we're doing a disservice to our employee because we understand that difference in income makes a difference. But then we have a disgruntled employee working on our floor. I've got over 600 employees. I don't need one more disgruntled employee because we force them to come back by way of causing them to lose their benefits. That's just a trap the state in some ways has put the employers and the employee into.
Very interesting. Crescenzo, 30 seconds. Do you appreciate that sentiment there?
Yeah, I think that's about right. The only thing I would add is that those numbers are probably a bit lower than real, just because it's measuring who like says that's why they're not coming back. Mm. I suspect the real number to be somewhat higher.
Well, I want to thank all four of you for taking the time. And, you know, we've had a ton of feedback from listeners. There's a lot of uncertainty about what happens next. This is one of those cases where it's not clear. It's not obvious what Congress is going to do. Congressman Morelli made that point last week. It is certainly, if you're playing a guessing game, it looks like congressional Republicans are going to lean on cutting the benefit from $600 to either $200 to $400 a week. But that's not a done deal, and they're working on that now. And this hour brought a lot of different perspectives. Kevin Schulte, CEO of GreenSpark Solar, always good. Thank you for making the time.
Thanks for having me. GreenSparkSolar.com/careers. We're hiring.
John Love, president of Bob Johnson Chevrolet. Thanks for your perspective, John.
Thanks, Evan. We're hiring. Lots of open jobs.
Lots of open jobs in this community. Crescenzo Scipione, Secretary of Counsel for Metro Justice. Thanks for making it work this hour, Crescenzo.
Anytime. MetroJustice.org. We're not hiring, but we're fighting.
Zahia Roll, a local artist and performer. Zahia, just do it. Where can people find your music?
They can find it Zahia.com or Silver Arrow Band.
Z-A-H-Y-I-A. You will not regret it. She's going to blow you away. Thanks to all of you. Thanks to Rob Braden, engineer, Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Talk to you tomorrow.